Thank you for tuning into our podcast, Hot Topics for Retirement Plan Sponsors. In today's session, we'll discuss a research study published by AllianceBernstein called Inside the Minds of Plan Participants. This ongoing research provides some very compelling insights as to what retirement plan sponsors are thinking about. I'm Bruce Lanzer, a senior retirement plan consultant with UBS, and I have nearly 40 years' experience working with retirement plan fiduciaries to maximize their fiduciary protection and also help the employees achieve their financial goals and be prepared for retirement. Today, I'll be talking with Heather Bailey. Heather is Managing Director of Participant Communications for AllianceBernstein's defined contribution business. In this role, she provides defined contribution product content focused on plan participants to the firm's institutional and retail clients. Heather is also responsible for AllianceBernstein's proprietary research that's focused on plan sponsor and participant behaviors with special attention to target date funds, participant engagement and confidence, as well as financial literacy. So Heather, thank you for joining us today, and tell me a little bit about AllianceBernstein's research inside the minds of plan participants.
Well, thanks for having me today, Bruce. So just to give you a little background, AllianceBernstein's been conducting annual research of plan participants since 2005 and biennial research of plan sponsors since 2006. We conducted our 14th participant survey in mid-2021, which I believe is the longest running participant survey in the industry. It was a national sample of 1,200 employees who were eligible for their employer's retirement plan, along with a subset of about 200 retirees. We have a pretty even distribution amongst the country's geography, age, sex, and a few other criteria. You know, so everyone has the same goal, is to help the American worker achieve better retirement outcomes. And these participant snapshots help us understand the attitudes and behaviors of workers toward retirement saving and really guides us into what we can do to help. We in the industry live and breathe investments in asset allocation and diversification and QDIAs. But we should remember that for most people, investment understanding isn't inherently known. Participants need help and guidance, whether that's directly from you or the plan themselves, through its use of plan design.
Now, Heather, why should we care what American workers are thinking?
Well, it's so important. We do such a good job of offering a retirement plan and in the workforce, but not a lot of folks understand what the investments are inside or how to take retirement income or how to plan sponsors need to know how participants want to engage with them. And so we do a pretty good job of helping with the accumulation phase of saving for retirement, but we're really not doing such a great job of with engagement or really that second phase of how to take retirement income when the participant actually retires.
Now, what are some of the key findings of this year's study?
So let's start out with some of the newer questions that we asked, and COVID has obviously been a big topic over the past couple of years. So we asked the question of how has COVID affected retirement savings? So the pandemic has certainly affected employees and their finances, and about a third of the respondents in our survey said that COVID impacted how and when they are planning on retiring. Now, that figure has a direct impact on workforce management, so plan sponsors should be interested in that number. And really no surprise that people who were affected by the pandemic turned to their credit cards first. So 39% of the people that responded in our survey used their credit cards and carried a balance on those cards to pay for living expenses. 29% tapped into their emergency savings if they had any. And then another 17% used the money in their retirement savings either by loan or early withdrawal to pay for living expenses. These statistics, and we also did the survey in summer of 2021, so we're about to field the next annual survey. So I'm going to take a guess that those numbers are probably even higher now that we're another year past the start of COVID. These statistics alone are enough for an employer to say, at the very least, we need to reach out to our employees and offer some helpful information on the importance of something, say, like an emergency fund. I think the plans that already had financial wellness programs in place were well positioned for the pandemic. And those who do not should consider some kind of program, even if it's something as simple as a seminar on emergency savings.
So responsible investing has also been in the news, Heather. What do participants think about this topic?
We've been hearing a lot about this topic. This is the second time we've asked questions about responsible investing, and the answer is clear. for example, 83% of respondents feel it's important to very important that the investment options in their company's DC plan mesh with their core ethical values. Two-thirds, 62%, said that they would be likely to very likely to choose to invest in ESG funds if they were available and performance and fees were comparable to other investments in the plan. No surprise that when we asked if performance were lower and fees were higher, only 39% of respondents would invest in these funds. You know, social consciousness only goes so far when it comes to investing. Interestingly, we try to create like this well-rounded picture of who the participant is. So we ask questions about their time and how they spend it. So interestingly, about 38% say they volunteer their time, which is a drop from 50% in our last survey, perhaps due to the pandemic. And almost 75% of participant respondents donate money to charity. Now, by asking these questions, you're starting to see like a full person evolve in the survey results. People want responsible investing. People donate money to charity. That's who they are. But the reality is that right now, only a small number of plan sponsors, I've seen percentages from, you know, 2.6 up to 14 currently offer ESG investment options in their plans. And either way, it's way less than the U.S. retirement plan assets. And more of those are really in the brokerage window, allowing ESG funds in the brokerage window. As a reminder, standalone ESG options are quite different than overall ESG integration. ESG integration is the systematic and explicit inclusion of material ESG factors into investment analysis and investment decisions, which AB has been doing for years. The desire for these investments will bring this topic to a crossroads between plan sponsor, participant, regulatory bodies, financial advisors, consultants. So this topic is not going away anytime soon, and we're going to have to kind of harness the desire and the regulation around desire for responsible investing.
You're exactly right. And the Department of Labor has a proposal out right now to change the existing guidance of what plan sponsors can and can't do with regard to ESG, environmental, social, and governance investment process, and really encouraging plan sponsors to at least consider those sorts of options for their investment menus.
Yes, absolutely.
So Heather, what are workers' main concerns with respect to living in retirement?
So, you know, over the years of our surveys, you know, the same longstanding issues have dominated most workers' concerns with living in retirement. And these are folks that have not yet retired, but they're thinking about retirement. So this is the first time that the top concern is of participants is being able to maintain a pre-retirement lifestyle. You know, a bit surprising that number was highest among 35 to 54-year-olds. You know, and maybe that's when people start to think about, when it starts to sink in that, you know, how much you have saved or you haven't saved in your retirement nest egg. So being able to maintain your pre-retirement lifestyle is highest among that age cohort. And there's a repeated theme that comes up quite a bit in the research. It's the confirmation that you can't start thinking about retirement in retirement and that you need to get ahead of it while there's still time to make adjustments. You know, whether that's adjusting your deferral rate, adjusting your investment allocations, rethinking when you want to retire and so on. And, you know, that's where I can see a participant heavily relying on advice to balance so many conflicting needs, including student loans, paying for college, mortgage, saving for retirement. It's the time where everything is kind of happening at one time. We also asked respondents, you know, how today's political environment has affected their confidence in being able to reach their retirement goals. And interestingly or not, roughly one-third say it's had no effect. About 9% say their confidence has actually improved. But more than half of our respondents, 56%, feel today's political environment has lowered their retirement confidence, most notably among those that are 55 to 75 years old.
So that's a great segue into some of the newer questions you asked in the survey of a specific subset of respondents, and that being retirees. What do you see that they're worried about, and how are they doing?
So this is, I think, our second or third year that we've asked retirees, you know, what would you do differently? I love these questions because you're basically asking, what would you do differently if you had like a do-over in your life? And so for the majority, the answer was overwhelmingly put more money away into retirement savings. But, you know, among the rest, there are many things that they might have done better, including taking better care of their health and working longer. Some retirees note that they would have tried to figure out what they were going to do with their free time in retirement. And others wish they had learned more about finances. And then a few others lower down on the list would have downsized earlier. And what about the standard of living for retirees? For, you know, for a small few, retirement's not so bad. 46% said their standard of living has stayed the same, and 22% even say things got better. But what's most concerning is about a third said that their standard of living has actually gone down. And our research showed that 60% of retirees said that their spending has declined. So when analyzing income and expenses, retirees are underspending in retirement due to the uncertainty of how much they can spend. So this is a real world example. I did two industry events earlier this year on the topic of financial wellness. And one of the comments that I heard from a plan sponsor, which was so intriguing, was that the plan had one of their highest attended sessions by a group of retirees, and they offered sessions on the weekend too, which is really wonderful given that, you know, these people no longer work for the organization, but the plan sponsor still felt compelled to kind of include this group as a part of their financial wellness program, which I thought was awesome.
So looking at market environment, market volatility is here to stay. How do workers feel about volatility? Obviously not good, but what actions do they say they would take?
So, you know, we had a pretty good run with market returns, you know, but as of late, things haven't been quite as good, where we've seen some swings in the market too, and nobody knows when they'll happen. So when we ask participants, you know, what about sudden market swings? What are you likely to do? 45% said they'll wait and watch. Another third said they would leave everything as is, no matter what. But 20% of participants said that they'd move money to different investments, which we all know is not the correct path for a long-term investor in a retirement setting. And, you know, as a follow-up to that question, about 43% say that volatility up or down makes them want to become a more conservative investor. You know, and that's really an important fact. Saving for retirement is a long-term endeavor. We hope that participants have the proper asset allocation for their age and risk tolerance. You know, it's a fine balance, because you also don't want to have an investor allocated too conservatively where they don't realize market growth. And that's really where a QDIA can help participants.
It's interesting you mentioned that they're also concerned about upside market volatility.
Yeah, I think volatility in general is just, you know, maybe it's more comforting to be slow and steady. At least that's the way it is for me.
Right. So what's happening with worker confidence? It seems to be perennially low. What are reasons that workers are confident or not confident?
Oh, gosh. So retirement confidence is on the decline for those who feel very confident to confident. Confidence received a big drop from our last survey, which is really no surprise as we emerge from 2 years of quarantine and uncertainty. Nevertheless, about two-thirds of respondents only feel so-so about their confidence. For those feeling kind of iffy, we searched further to find out why they were feeling like that. So for those with low to no retirement confidence, we asked, well, why do you feel this way? And kind of year over year, workers' top concerns remain the same. For those that are not feeling very confident, Social Security may not help as much as it did in the past. They don't think they've saved enough money, and inflation may hurt their spending power. And then a little bit further down the list, you know, 23% said market volatility scares me, and on with respondents saying that they're going to continue to work part-time. 20% said they're not going to receive a pension. And so what I think is so interesting is that the people who are net confident, who are very confident to confident, have very similar answers as to why they're confident. 45% say they will get a pension from their employer. 44% say, I have enough savings. 37% said, I will get money from Social Security. So it's a lot of the same answers, except it's taking either a negative kind of hat with those concerns or a positive hat with those concerns. So I don't know. Anyway, along those lines, and specific to investing confidence, participants revealed a mixed confidence in their investing capabilities. About half say that they would want to select their own mix of individual funds or are comfortable deciding how much to invest in each fund in their retirement plan. But even fewer have the time to keep an eye on those investments and make changes as they get closer to retirement. And doubts exist about whether their investments will generate an income stream that will last throughout retirement. You know, but I'm not really interested in the people who agree with these statements, that they feel like comfortable with managing their own investments. I'm really interested in the people that in the survey that said, I'm not comfortable making these investment decisions. You know, it's really in the details that you can see the true benefit of automatic enrollment, auto escalation. However, you know, now the negative to that is, however, these very planned features that are supposed to help participants also create kind of an inertia, which I think is contributing to the decline of participant engagement. When they're automatically enrolled or automatically escalated into the QDIA, these are all good things, but there is this feeling that maybe your retirement investments are kind of on autopilot. And so that's the challenge for plan sponsors, is to still break through to the participant and say, look, it's on autopilot, but we still want to engage with you so that you can check in and make sure you're on track for your own personal needs.
Yeah, good point.
So it's sort of a
And you, know, you mentioned
cycle.
Earlier some of the wellness programs that can really help with the engagement beyond just saving for retirement.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because sometimes like retirement's like it's a long-term thing, but then there's other things that creep up in your life. My child's about to go to college. Like, how am I going to fund this? Or estate planning or, you know, what's a health savings account? There's so many topics for those later in life. I'm heading towards retirement. Like, when am I supposed to take Social Security? Like, when do I sign up for Medicare? So those are the kinds of topics that we're thinking about.
Right. You know, you also mentioned how, you know, I forget the percentage, but certain percentage of employees are planning on working in retirement. And from the work that our team has done with plan participants, oftentimes, you know, it's not just the monetary side of working part-time. They want to, you know, maintain a certain level of activity, you know, feel like they're accomplishing something, getting out of the house rather than, you know, just kind of this permanent vacation. They want that activity. They want that engagement with people outside of, you know, the home and the immediate family. So a lot of benefits to working part-time in retirement beyond the financial and the monetary side of things.
100%. I agree with everything you just said. It's not only about the money. It's about contributor to society and your family and keeping your brain sharp. That's for sure.
Exactly. So talking about retirees, what are workers' main goals for the money that they've saved inside their retirement plans?
So again, this question, it was geared towards people still working. So every year we ask respondents, what is your primary savings goal for the money in your workplace retirement savings plan? Out of a dozen answers, they can choose up to three. So it would seem relatively obvious that the top answer would be to provide income in retirement. And yes, that is the number one answer. And incidentally, provide income in retirement is the top goal for savings inside and outside the retirement plan. So those respondents who were most interested in the answer, provide income in retirement, was highest for the 65 to 75 age group. To have money for an emergency at 59% was the highest among 25 to 34-year-olds. So now you're seeing a picture of like what's everyone has a different goal and for the money in their retirement plan. And in general, the two youngest age cohorts' main goals were to live comfortably and enjoy life. And the number two was to be debt-free and pay your bills. So, you know, when thinking about the various participants in your retirement plan, you can really see that every person, their goals, investment understanding, engagement, confidence is different from person to person. So many of my research colleagues in the industry subscribe to generational attitudes about investing, and we all Gen Xers think this, or baby boomers think this. And I 100% disagree with that approach. In another, maybe another podcast, we'll dive into what we've uncovered about investor personas. So we believe there's different buckets of investors, whether you're in a retirement plan or not. So not every baby boomer or Gen Xer believes the same thing. You know, my father, for example, he's a boomer, but he doesn't have a computer or Wi-Fi. But I know lots of boomers out there that have that. So
myself included.
So not everybody is the same based off generational buckets. We just heard that the number one goal of retirement savings was to provide income in retirement. But let's see if a participant actually knows how to take income in from their nest egg without running out of money. So we asked a financial understanding question with a tilt to retirement income. So the question was, if you retired at age 65 and had $500,000, what percentage of that $500,000 could you spend each year for the rest of your life without running out of money? Well, shockingly, this is very upsetting to even to witness, nearly half of the respondents said that they could spend 7% or more of the initial balance and not run out of money. Wow. And nearly a third believe that they could spend 10% or more annually. So according to this question alone, the majority of respondents would run out of money if they took this approach. And, you know, nothing really has changed. We've asked this question in prior surveys, and the results are holding steady. Participants don't understand. They understand that they need to save for retirement, but when it comes to actually taking income to live on with that money, they don't understand how much they should take. So everyone's been so focused on the accumulation. Now, it's only recently that folks are starting to realize that the accumulation story is only half the battle.
That's certainly true. And Bill Sharp, Nobel Prize winner in economics, has said that managing retirement income and that withdrawal phase is the most difficult thing in finance.
Absolutely. So, you know, keeping with that thread of retirement income, we asked another question. Okay, you know retirement income is important. You're going to need it. You don't know how much you're exactly going to take from your nest egg. But what are some things that are important to you about a retirement income solution? So just very generally speaking, we're not going to get into the nitty-gritty, like different solutions. But we asked the question, would you rather have $40,000 in guaranteed annual income, but your money could grow with the stock market and you'd be able to access that money in your account? Or would you rather have $50,000 in guaranteed income, but your money would not grow with the market and you would not have access to the principal of your account? And Bruce, can you take a guess what the response was?
I'm going to say the $50,000.
Wrong answer. Almost 70% of respondents said that they would rather have $40,000 in guaranteed annual income, but the money could grow with the markets and they'd always have access to that money. I think that's a scary thing when you have this irrevocable decision where your money just disappears if you pass away the next day after you buy something. So overwhelmingly, participants would take less guaranteed income if it meant that they would retain control over their money and their money had the potential to grow. So I think, you know, that's an important thing to know when you talk to or when plan sponsors think about retirement income solutions, is that flexibility and control are so important to people. They want to be able to control their money that they spent like basically a lifetime saving for. You don't want to just hand it over to somebody and let it go.
Point well taken. So it sounds like workers aren't clear on how much income they can take in retirement. What about general financial literacy?
Oh my gosh. In general, financial literacy isn't great either. We asked a number of basic financial literacy questions like, what type of investment has more risk, a stock or a bond? Things that seem very basic to us and maybe in the industry. And out of 7 questions, only 20% got all 7 questions right, which is really low. I think a good example is around one particular type of investment, you know, target date funds, which are frequently used as the QDIA. I don't want to spend too much time on target date funds, but as we know, a majority of plans use them. So this is kind of a good example. The data is really just to illustrate that participants don't know the basics about some of the investments in their plan. 50% of respondents who use target date funds incorrectly believe that target dates automatically guarantee you'll meet your income needs in retirement. Both target date users and non-users think that target date funds are FDIC insured. Hmm. And that's a little scary. And when we asked this group, why do you think target date funds are guaranteed? 39% say that the year listed in the fund name tells them that their accounts are guaranteed to be sufficiently funded that year. 44% think the materials they received say that the funds are guaranteed. And 41% said that the representative who presented to their company told them that the funds were guaranteed. We believe that target date funds do a great job in helping participants. But this research shows that advisors, asset managers, record keepers, and the plans themselves need to do a better job at educating about investments in general, particularly target date funds. Define everything, even if you think it's obvious. That's kind of my mantra anyway. Define what is a target date fund? What is it and what is it not? I think that's really important.
Yeah, definitely. Education and making more well-informed investors and retirees is going to be good for all of us.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for your time. Again, we've been speaking with Heather Bally of AllianceBernstein, and thank you for sharing the research insights from inside the minds of plan participants. Now, if anyone would like to receive a copy of that study, you can contact me, Bruce Lanzer, at 414-289-3817. Again, 414-289-3817. or email me at bruce.lanser@ubs.com. That's B-R-U-C-E dot L-A-N as in Nancy, S as in Sam, E-R at ubs.com. Thank you again, Heather, and thank you all for listening.
Thanks, Bruce.